This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, welcome, boys and girls, to the first day of the weekend that isn't actually raining. You can step outside of your arc, begin moving around, look for the double animal tracks, and go for the place where it may start raining this afternoon. We'll have a little updated weather forecast, 20 after the hour, so stay tuned. Not that you would turn off anyway, because we have a very interesting, educational, and even somewhat opinionated program today. It's one of our fundraiser shows. Someone pledged $100 to the program that we would talk about this topic. Not that I wouldn't discuss it anyway, but it just sort of speeds up the process and helps me find the guests. Alzheimer's and its effect on the medical system. Guest today, ladies first. Let's check out all these microphones while Michael's standing behind me. Jean McCusker. Jean, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great, Rick.
Thank you for coming in. Jean is the owner of a local, it's a franchise, is it not? Home Instead Senior Care. 20 words on what Home Instead Senior Care is.
We provide non-medical services to keep people home and independent as long as possible. And quite a few of our folks have Alzheimer's and dementia, so this topic is very important to us.
So is this sort of a hospice without the immediacy of death?
No, not necessarily hospice. It might be as simple as somebody needing to get to the grocery store or the doctor, or somebody with Alzheimer's that needs 24-hour-a-day care. So we do a whole gamut of services.
All right, great. Thank you for coming in. All right, now here comes the tricky part. The mixer always has its own little lifestyle. Next up is Ward Campbell. Ward, how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thank you so much. Ward, your spouse has Alzheimer's and you are the primary caregiver, correct?
Yes, I am. Peggy was diagnosed with Alzheimer's about 6 years ago. And since that time, it's been all downhill, a little bit at a time. It's a very long, tragic disease for which there is no cure. She has been ill for some time, but we've used a lot of community support, and so far she's still at home, and I do everything.
Okay. I think that will make for a very interesting part of the hour conversation. And finally, over by the window, jammed into the corner, trying not to hurt his neck with our short-corded headphone, Mr. Larry Zippin, president of the local Alzheimer's Association, correct?
That's correct.
I want to thank you so much for coming in. Tell me, how long have you been involved with Alzheimer's Association and why?
Well, this is, I guess I'll be coming up on my fourth year in June. I have been working in not-for-profit association management my whole business life, which now, as you might tell from my advanced age, has spanned 4 decades. Alzheimer's, once you get to know anything about it, is such a compelling disease and cause that, frankly, it's very hard to avoid becoming involved. With my background, we moved down here to Charlottesville 4 years ago. I stumbled on this opportunity and couldn't resist its call. As we'll talk about, I suspect, in a little bit, the number of people that have this disease, the number of caregivers who are also affected by this disease, and the prospects of this disease bankrupting the healthcare system are so enormous that one really, unless they have no feelings, needs to really be involved in this cause.
All right, boys and girls, write down the radio numbers. You're going to want them during the hour, I believe, to make some comments on a topic such as Alzheimer's, to ask some questions about how we got here and where we go forward. 979-0919. That's right, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free line for those of you listening. Maybe out in the new Harrisonburg number 95.1 or the Richmond 103.1. because it's a, you know, I've done this show before, and a lot of it is because it has to do with me personally as well. You know, my grandfather had Alzheimer's, and it was dramatic for me, and I was 2.5 hours away. I didn't even have to do that on a regular basis. I only saw him on visits home and holidays, etc. So who wants to jump off and just lay out some basic statistics for everyone? How many people are suffering, the average age that it's diagnosed, things like that.
I'll start with some general statistics. Excuse me. Here in the Charlottesville and Central Virginia area, we have over 5,000 people suffering from Alzheimer's disease. The numbers are quite scary when you think 1 in 10 people over 65 will get the disease, and 1 in 2 over 85 will get the disease. So it is very impactful across the community, and I love how Larry describes it. He said, you know, 20, 30 years ago when we talked about cancer, we'd whisper, they have cancer. And that's how Alzheimer's still is. And it's becoming more and more of an important issue because as the baby boomers grow, we're seeing this population grow significantly.
So, Larry, is this an issue where it's because society is staying, is getting older through time?
Yeah.
Is this an age-based issue?
Yeah, age is the greatest risk factor associated with Alzheimer's disease. Interestingly enough, why is it becoming so much more noticeable, common, and prevalent? It's because people are living longer. When my parents, in my parents' time, if you retired from the factory at age 65, you got your watch, your pension, your company paid health care benefits, and you lived for a couple of more years and then you dropped dead. Now people my age have expectations after age 65 to live another 20, 30 years. And indeed, that's what's happening. There are older, more people are older.
All right, so Alzheimer's is increasing in diagnosed numbers.
That's correct. And actually, you use an interesting word, diagnosed. Again, going back to the olden days, people who became demented were assumed to just be getting old, hardening of the arteries. Grandma was a little senile and a little silly. When in point of fact, those symptoms may have been symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. There was no way to diagnose it until autopsy after death. In point of fact, today, autopsy is the only 100% sure way of diagnosis. However, modern medicine can diagnose Alzheimer's with almost 95% certainty by the process of elimination, by eliminating urinary tract infections, vitamin B12 deficiencies, depression, drug interactions.
What do you find physically where you have to wait until an autopsy?
Well, what happens is there are 70, I think there are about 70 different kinds of dementia. And they aren't all Alzheimer's, although Alzheimer's accounts for 50% of all dementias. So changes in behavior can be caused by any number of things that aren't Alzheimer's. I mentioned the urinary tract infection, very common. Depression in senior citizens, very common.
Yeah, but I thought, and you know, I don't want to make such an important topic silly, but cranberry juice, right? Doesn't that fix urinary tract infections?
Not as they progress. It's antibiotics.
Let me ask real quick. All right, so the number of diagnosed sufferers. Is that a good word?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not one for political correctness, but sometimes you have to.
People with dementia probably is a better way to say it.
And I'll screw that up again later in the hour.
Okay.
Not out of intent, but poor memory. Has the age with which people are beginning to be noted, is that decreasing? But instead of having to wait until you're 65 or 80. Are we now finding that a much larger percentage of people in the population are beginning to be struck with diagnosis with Alzheimer's or dementia at age 40 or 50?
Well, early diagnosis is the key. Alzheimer's doesn't just, you don't wake up one morning and say, oops, I have Alzheimer's. Our brains, Rick, yours and mine, at this moment are changing. The challenge for medicine is to be able to identify those changes before symptoms arise or are shown, and then treat those symptoms. Currently, one isn't treated, if you will, until the symptoms appear.
And Rick, to go along with that, the more work I do with the Alzheimer's Association, the more I hear from people, oh my gosh, my friend who's 50 or 53 was just diagnosed. So there is early onset, and I think it is becoming more prevalent.
Ward, right after this question, I want you to start thinking ahead, because you're going to be hit next with a question that I imagine is going to be a little deep. But what I want to know is from everyone else, is dementia, Alzheimer's, is that genetic? Is it just because of the fact that we're all aging, and now as we get older we're suffering from diseases that we might not have experienced in the past? Is it environmentally caused? I realize that we can't at this point say, you know, X factor causes Y disease. But do Americans have a greater percentage of dementia patients than other European countries? You know, that's what I want to know a little bit about. Where does this come from? Put it in a grander perspective for me.
Sure. Well, if I may, Alzheimer's doesn't discriminate between races, religions, gender.
Countries?
Countries, nope.
Gross national product?
Nope. And in point of fact, in the United States, there are numbers that show that African Americans and Hispanic people, the incidence of Alzheimer's is growing faster than amongst the Caucasian population.
Urban cities versus rural
towns? Nope, they don't know. I suspect, and I'm not a scientist, that at the end of the day, there will be multiple factors that lead to a more likely diagnosis of Alzheimer's, probably some environmental. You read every once in a while that the aluminum in deodorant causes dementia. Or if you take vitamin E and various other herbal supplements, you are less likely to get dementia. The best science today says that heart-healthy behavior, things that you do to keep your heart healthy, also keeps your brain healthy. So what are those? Exercise, eat properly, don't smoke. Diabetes, for example, increases the risk of dementia by 50%.
Good grief. All right, it is 11:12 here on the Wake Up Call. We are talking about Alzheimer's and its effect on the current medical system. You just heard Larry Zippin, president from Alzheimer's Association, here in the studio. We have Jean McCusker. She's an owner of Home Instead Senior Care. And we have Ward Campbell, caregiver, primary caregiver to his spouse, who is suffering from Alzheimer's. Ward, I want to know a little bit about your reaction to how this when Peggy first started, what you first noted, and how things went from there.
At the beginning, there wasn't a real big change in our life. Alzheimer's starts with some little noticed consequences, and I was kind of glad to find out what the cause of her unusual behavior was. So I was, in a way, glad to get the Alzheimer's diagnosis, but yet knew I was in for a rough ride. For the first few years, nothing much changed. I could leave Peggy alone. I could go and do my regular schedule as I saw fit, and she took care of things that she did. However, gradually, after a year or two, she got lost, for instance, coming home from church when she was driving, and got terribly frightened. And fortunately, she decided at that point she wasn't going to drive anymore. So she realized something was wrong, didn't want to get lost anymore, and it must have been horrible because she kept asking for directions, and people would send her a little ways away, and she would get lost again, couldn't really find her way back home. As things got worse, I began to look for more community resources, and fortunately we have a wonderful JABA here, which takes care of older people, and they have an adult daycare center. I started off with Peggy just one day a week, and she didn't seem to mind going, wasn't real excited about it, but one day a week she spent there, and it was good. after probably two or three more years, we went to 2 days a week, and then 3 days a week and 4 days a week. And beginning early last year, she went to 5 days, and now if they had six, we'd go to six. She likes it there. She's happy there. She does well there, and it's to the point now where she's probably happier at JABA than she is at home because she enjoys being with the people and doing some activities, whereas on Saturdays and Sundays, there's just me and her in the empty house.
And what do you do at home on Saturday? I mean, because this question is, I feel obligated to ask these for people who are dealing with this as the primary caregiver now, who are concerned that this may be the site of their future, and all you can do is tell me that you don't want to talk about it. If you're home on Saturdays and you're the primary caregiver, you don't have children who live at home, do you? So
no.
You are her watchdog to keep yourself safe, to keep her safe, et cetera, correct?
Yes, it is, and that's a real tough problem. All day Saturday and all day Sunday, I have to look out for her. I can't do anything by myself. I have to stay with her. I can't even go out and mow the lawn because she would not necessarily get in trouble, but she rearranges the furniture. She takes the sofas apart. She takes the bed apart. She might even move the mattress off the box springs, take things out of the bookcase, maybe even take the shelves out of the bookcase. Nothing really bad, but she finds something to do if I'm not there. So it's pretty much I'm locked in with her all the time. We're fortunate today that Jean brought a helper with her who is staying with Peggy right now. I can't leave her alone. I am probably now approaching the point where it's too much to handle, and there will be residential care probably not too distant future.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it's not good for me and it's not good for her under the present situation. She is very sociably minded. She likes to be with people. She's happier with people, and she enjoys the camaraderie of a group. Nights she doesn't sleep well. She'll get up 3, 4, 5 times just about every night, so it limits the sleep I can get, and this is 7 nights a week. So there is a limited things that I can do. I have to buy the food, select it, make the menus up, cook it, serve it, clean up afterwards. She cannot even clear the table. She can do nothing, cannot dust the furniture, can't make her bed, can't put her clothes on, can't, you know, so it's all up to me, and it, after 6 years, it's tiresome.
And that's one of the things that we're going to get into in a little bit is the stress on on the caregiver. How do you do simple things like go to the grocery store? Do you take her with you?
No, that's where JABA comes in. I am free during the days.
So you're not with her at JABA?
No, she stays at JABA. I bring her there in the morning. Generally, by about 9 o'clock, she's at JABA. And then I'm free until 5 o'clock in the afternoon when I pick her up, between 5 and 5:30. So one day a week, I do the shopping. I drop her off at JABA, and then I go to the grocery store, and that's it for the week, and go home. So I do have time during the day, during the week.
By the way, for those who aren't familiar, JABA, Jefferson Area Board of Aging. Right?
Yes.
So you can find that in the in the business pages.
Hillsborough Drive has a nice new building with a wonderful facility for caring for elderly people.
All right. We are talking about Alzheimer's and its effect on the medical system. That was Ward Campbell, who's the primary caregiver to his spouse, Peggy, who is has Alzheimer's. We also have Gene McCusker, owner of Home Instead Senior Care, and Larry Zippin, the president of the local Alzheimer's Association, here in the studio on today's Wake Up Call. Let me take a moment and give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy today, highs 60 to 65. Partly cloudy with some clearing tonight, lows 45 to 50. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 70 to 75. Right now it's cloudy all across the listening area. 53 in the Valley, 54 in Lynchburg, 59 in Richmond, in Charlottesville, 57.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find them at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. Blue Ridge Graphics provides custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items such as bumper stickers, water bottles, and travel mugs for schools, organizations, and businesses. Blue Ridge Graphics can be reached at 434-296-9746. That's Blue Ridge Graphics. And, you know, we just finished up our fund drive, but we're still taking pledge payments. But we want to take a moment and thank Emily Soar, Joel Brown of Charlottesville, as well as Casey Forehand of Lynchburg. They're the latest grand prize winners from the Fall 06 Fund Drive. Emily's taken home the Sony digital camera from Crutchfield. Joel was the winner of the Fall Camping Package from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. And Casey's going to be the guest at the Hampton Inn and Suites University. So pay your pledge ASAP. That's for the next gift. That's tomorrow, Monday, before 10, to be eligible for the Atlantic Futon queen-size platform bed, the $250 gift certificate from Scarpa, and another weekend stay at the Hampton Inn and Suites here by the university, or pay by 5 p.m. on Monday to be eligible for the 91.9-second CD run from Plan 9 and the $500 shopping spree from Seville Bike and Tri. If you made a pledge, pay your dues, boys and girls. All right, 979-0919, if you have questions or comments for anyone in the studio, Ward, Larry, Gene, dial us up. Michael's around here today to patch people through. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free line. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919. All right, let me turn everybody's buttons back on. I guess the next thing to talk about, and Gene, I'll start with you on this one. Ward's the primary caregiver at home. And Ward, feel free to jump in with this. What percentage of people are following in Ward's footsteps and taking care of spouses or parents or whomever on their own? And what percentage are doing so with an assisted care facility or a paid organization or facility?
I can't give you exact numbers. Larry can. He's
70% of people with Alzheimer's are cared for at home by family.
70%?
70, right.
Good Lord.
And the frightening thing that follows that is one in three people caring for a loved one will die before their loved one suffering from Alzheimer's. So it's an incredible stress on the family. You hear what Ward does, and he's doing it by himself, and unfortunately this is the model that's out there. In our family, just to give you an example, when my mom was sick and we took care of her, after she passed away within 6 months, I had bronchitis, appendicitis, and pneumonia. And it just beats up your body, and you don't let it because you don't have time, and your body's just completely stressed out.
And, you know, I'm assuming that the majority of those issues, whether they're death earlier or whether they are disease and illness such as you suffered, they're attributed to the stress of being the caregiver?
Yes, there was a study done, and I can't tell you who did it, but this person studied people with Alzheimer's and their primary caregivers and their immune systems. The people with Alzheimer's, their immune systems were relatively healthy. This is a neurological disease, and they're fine. The caregivers' immune systems were equivalent to people with AIDS, and this person studied them after the caregiving process, and it took 2 years for their bodies to bounce back. So it's very impactful. You're not getting sleep, as Ward said, and you're not eating because you're following somebody around the house because they might get hurt, and it's not a healthy situation.
And it goes on for years and years. I mean, if this were a disease where after a month the person died, it was one thing. But Alzheimer's can last from up to 20 years. The average is 8 years. And if you just imagine, Rick, never being able to go out with the guys for a beer, go to a movie, get your hair cut, woman get her nails done or a pedicure, you can never leave the house. That's why one of the services that the Alzheimer's Association provides are respite financial grants. We pay for people to be able to buy home care, someone to stay with a loved one, daycare. There's a cost for daycare. We provide financial aid so people can take advantage of community-based services.
Well, I guess I'm just sort of, you know, and I try and play the ignorant person, and sometimes that doesn't take as much fake as others might believe. But why would Ward, why would you choose, and why would the other remaining 70% choose to do this at home and suffer the consequences that go with it rather than finding help? Now, you found help through JABA, but I'm sure that there are, as you already mentioned, lots of other times besides Monday through Friday day business that you would like to have the help, that there are plenty of other communities in our nation that don't have some place like JABA to offer to these people. So why is there such a large percentage, at 70%, who are doing this work on their own?
I think there are several reasons. And one is that there is good help available. JABA is available, so I use it. And I don't want to feel guilty of giving up on Peggy too soon, so I take a little burden on myself that I'll make this last as long as I can. Then there's a help from Jean and her people. Like you mentioned, I'm free Monday through Friday, but if I want to go out for an evening or a weekend or I want to take some time away, I can call up home instead, and they will have someone come by and stay with Peggy. The difficulty, I think, for me, one of the difficulties is that this all costs money. JABA is not cheap. And residential care is very expensive. So when Peggy goes into full-time residential care, it's going to cost a lot of money. Probably the minimum in this area would be $3,000 a month for a semi-private room. The least expensive private room would be about $4,000 a month. So we're talking in the neighborhood of $50,000 a year. So that's something I'm going to put off as long as I can, because my $50,000 is at my age. Are not going to come easy. So I don't want to do it too soon, but yet I want to be fair to Peggy. When she's ready, I want to do it, and I hope the funding is there. But, you know, it's a big expense.
Rick, there are cultural barriers to nursing home admission, to admitting a loved one to a nursing home. You hear, I'm sure everyone hears, I promised I'd never put her away. The notion that doing that is somehow evil and cruel is something that sort of needs to be, people need to be disabused of, because frankly there comes a time when you, a caregiver, can no longer safely take care of a loved one at home, and a facility offers skilled care where the person is, you're guaranteed that the loved one is cared for. But imagine the scene, an 80-year-old husband taking care of a 78-year-old bedridden wife, not ambulatory, has to lift her up out of the bed, take her to toilet. I mean, how long will that take for that man to develop back pain or just break down physically and emotionally? I say in my stump speeches, this is a disease that will drive millions of people to emotional and financial bankruptcy if a cure isn't found or a way isn't found to delay or postpone the onset of the disease.
All right, 11:28 here on the Wake Up Call as we continue to talk about the Alzheimer's, and I'm getting ready to jump into the medical system effect. So stretch out your finger muscles, because you're going to want to dial in 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I do want to take a moment and thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries. It's because of support from businesses like them that we have the Wake Up Call on Sundays. They are Cedarville Reader's Choice for burgers, and Five Guys serves America's Standard, fresh and handmade, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10, Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, in the Hollymead Town Center, and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E guys. .com. All right, toss this out to any of the three of you. One of the bits of information that I came up with was that families providing their own home care, it was $200 billion in free expense that they saved, both spending on the healthcare system in one way or another, either paying at the hospitals or paying a professional caregiver, etc. And some of that, from what I gathered, was due to the fact that there were not enough agencies, there were not enough organizations, there were not enough train staff members to do so. And Larry, you were telling me that the number of people who will be suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia is only going to increase. So somebody jump in and tell me, how are we going to handle this as a nation?
I almost think that's a whole nother radio show on affordable living and things like that, because that's one of the biggest challenges affecting this industry right now is the labor pool. We can't find enough people to come in and take care of people.
I think at the end of the day, the quick answer, Rick, is that...
Don't be too quick. We got a half hour to go.
Okay. I talk fast. I can't help it. The healthcare system will not be able to handle the baby boomer generation, where 77 million of you will be in the pool of people for whom Medicare and Medicaid will need to support. It just can't happen at current levels of funding by federal and state governments.
By the way, I'm the first year of the Gen X, and don't be aging me any faster than I need to be.
You're a kid.
Thank you. I often act like one, and even my mother, we can call her again this week, and she'll say the same. Actually, we should call her, because it was her father who suffered from Alzheimer's. So where does, you know, what do we do next? And I realize that that's sort of an open-ended blah, blah, blah question, but if the industry, the medical industry, is already dependent on families to not spend $200 billion to overwhelm the system, but the families are suffering so much that they're no longer unable to do it, and the industry doesn't have enough people to do it either. I mean, you know, not to be sort of sad, overly sad about it, but are we going to float back to sometime in the 1910s and 20s where we just have these big medical institutions and we just toss people in it and wait for them to pass away?
No, there'll have to be changes in the healthcare system, Rick, and I don't want to antagonize the audience by advocating a radical change in the healthcare system. But
I don't know why not.
What the hope, well, maybe I will later, but the hope is that since 90% of what we know about Alzheimer's has been learned in the last 15 years, there's hope that a cure will be found, or a way to postpone the onset or eliminate the onset. However, given current federal funding for research for Alzheimer's, which the current administration has slashed, there's a lot of work to be done on the part of all of us to advocate for more funding for research for Alzheimer's disease. Currently, the federal government spends $600 million on Alzheimer's research. Government.
That's a lot.
It's peanuts. When, hey, look at the cost of one day of a certain conflict in a certain country now in the Middle East. It's peanuts. It's insultingly low.
What did it used to be? And what does it go towards?
What the $600 million goes to?
Yeah, I mean, you said it goes to research, but...
National Institutes of Health has hundreds of scientists working on precisely trying to identify what the cause of Alzheimer's is. I mean, the cause is not known today. There's some speculation, and there's also a lot of work being done by Centers for Research Excellence at universities around the country. Scientists apply for grants, for federal grants, and they do their basic scientific research, eliminating notions such as the aluminum or too much tomatoes aren't any good. But the end of the day is that scientific basic research provides really the only hope for a cure to be found. But $600 million in the great scheme of things is petty cash, Rick.
All right. You mentioned that the local Alzheimer's Association, and I'll assume this goes to a national level as well, you get funding so that you can provide assistance to someone like Ward so that he can have a caregiver for a short time period, correct?
Right.
Did I understand that properly?
Yes, yes. A number of services. We provide a number of free services.
Where does the funding come from?
From individual donations exclusively, and a small grant currently from the State Department on Aging to provide, help us to provide these respite financial grants.
So these are philanthropic donations.
Those are charity donations. You got it.
All right. And have those gone up or gone down or remained the same? I mean, I'm sure that it has a minor effect on any $600 million, but...
Well, the $600 million is government spending on research. The Alzheimer's Association is the largest private funder of research, and over the past couple of years has contributed $200,000 for that research. The remainder of the money that comes to the Alzheimer's Association's 79 chapters comes from individual donations or community foundation grants.
79 chapters?
Yes.
In Virginia?
No, there are three in Virginia.
79 chapters
across
in 50
the country,
states?
Yes.
For something that is ranks where in terms of...
It's the fourth leading cause of death amongst senior citizens.
So we have more Alcoholics Anonymous chapters than we have Alzheimer's Association?
Oh, yeah. Well, listen.
For people who actually choose to be... Well, I'm not going to get into that because I know that there are issues about... alcohol, and not all of them choose to do so.
You know, Gene mentioned 5,000 people.
It just seems like an odd number. 79 doesn't seem like very many, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, it isn't, and I'll tell you, I'm responsible, and my chapter's responsible for half the state's landmass and a quarter of its population. Our territory goes down to Danville, includes Lynchburg, Roanoke, Harrisonburg, Waynesboro, and Charlottesville, where there are 33,000 people with Alzheimer's disease as of this moment in time. And that number is only going to grow.
And how many people are in this local organization?
We have 8 employees. So you tell me how 8 employees with a very limited budget can even begin to provide supportive services to 33,000 people.
And Gene, that's what Homestead Senior Care is attempting to fill this gap?
Well, we fill the gap by actually taking care of the folks. The Alzheimer's Association provides funding, support, 24-hour helpline. We actually go in and take care of the person with Alzheimer's. And because we're non-medical, it's kind of nice because we can help the family out. We can go in and do the laundry and cook dinner for the spouse and the person with Alzheimer's disease to kind of take the load off.
Ward, let me ask you, what is your greatest concern, and what do you need the most to continue on in a positive, less stressful life?
I think my greatest concern right now is a good night's sleep. I seldom get that. Peggy goes to bed early and goes to bed readily at about 9 o'clock. She's tired, and I can get her into her pajamas and into bed fairly easily. She goes to sleep. Then at 1 o'clock, she's back up again. And then maybe she goes back to sleep, and I can't get back to sleep. Then she'll get up, and I'll go back to sleep, and she'll get up. So this is the way the nights go. So I think the biggest single problem is the nighttime, because it just kind of goes back and forth like that. When she wakes up, she's wide awake, and I might not be awake at all, but yet after dealing with her for a while, I become wide awake and maybe can't get back to sleep. So that's a big thing, but... You know, I'm making my choices myself. I'm doing what I have to do, choosing to use JABA, choosing to use Home Instead, these facilities of Alzheimer's Association, putting it all together. And I think we're very blessed in Charlottesville to have these organizations and facilities available. And we have excellent residential care facilities that are here. So I feel fortunate to be here. And at the right time, I'm doing what I have to do, and I assume it'll continue that way. At 6 years of since diagnosis, Peggy is getting towards the 8-year average time, but it could go to 20, so you know I might be in it for a long, long time.
We are talking about Alzheimer's and its personal effects, its effect on the medical system. Gene McCusker, owner of Home Instead Senior Care, Ward Campbell, the primary caregiver for his spouse, Peggy, who has Alzheimer's, and Larry Zippin, the president of the local Alzheimer's Association. Ward, the word came up once so far. We've been talking for 39 minutes, and it didn't even come from you. Does guilt play anywhere into your decision-making?
It plays in a whole lot. Everyone wants to be fair to their spouse and do what is the best thing. And, of course, I want to do what's right. I don't want to put Peggy into residential care too soon, but yet what is that right time? her doctor says she's ready to go, and it's up to you when you're ready to let her go. I sometimes worry about whether it's better to have her home or have her not home. I think when she goes, it's going to be lonely in my house all by myself. And I'm kind of in the middle ground. Peggy's over here at an institution. I'm over here at a house. We're both limited. So I worry about it, you know, the guilt on my part. Everything's up to me. I do what needs to be done, and I hope to do it right. But I worry all the time that I may not be doing it right.
Do you have other people providing you with suggestions and bits of advice? You have children?
Yes, I have two children. They're both in Northern Virginia, and they are big support. They come down and visit from time to time, and we go up and visit them. I would like to mention, though, that I'm active in a Alzheimer's Association support group. We have 25 members in the group, and our usual weekly meetings might be 16 to 18 people. We meet every week for an hour and a half. And it's wonderful. We help each other out. We talk about things that are common problems. We have people come into the group who have their spouse or parent newly diagnosed. And we have some people who have been in the support group for many, many years as they have had to go through the process. And perhaps their loved one is now in an institution, but they still feel support by coming to the support group. So this is another big resource that the community provides, is having those kinds of outlets for the caregivers to get together and realize that we're not in this by ourselves, but there are other people going through the same things we are.
All right, 11:41 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, controversy rages after a government slaughter of nearly 80 pigs in western Buckingham County. Was this needed, and why done in such a way? A UVA grad student finds a little piece of literary treasure inside the UVA Special Collections Library, a never-before-published poem by Robert Frost. And folks who didn't pay their personal property tax by September 1st now have lost the state-funded car subsidy. The Hook reports that nearly 13,000 delinquent county tax bills are suddenly a lot steeper. The Hook. Do you have what it takes to read The Hook? Test yourself. And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. For campus, town, or mountain trails, you can choose from brands like Patagonia, Mountain Hardware, and The North Face for outerwear and over 170 styles of footwear. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Here in Charlottesville, they're at Wintergreen and in Richmond and at BRMS.com. And we want to remind you that WNRN and the Budweiser Concert Series present Trey Anastasio at the WNRN Charlottesville Pavilion Friday, October 13th. Trey is touring in support of his new CD, Bar 17. Proceeds of this concert benefit WNRN and is part of our 10th anniversary celebration. Tickets can be found at charlottesvillepavilion.com, Plan 9, Live Arts Box Office, and 877-CPAV-TIX. That's Trey Anastasio at the Charlottesville Pavilion, October 13th, to benefit WNRN. All right. Here's a call for someone who's just passing along their question. Some people, it's amazing how afraid they are that their voice will be recognized. Like, that's such a bad thing. All right. What are the educational requirements to volunteer time to help with patients? Who wants to take that? Good question, by the way, and not on my list.
The educational requirements to help, I think I understand the question, is to actually help somebody with Alzheimer's.
Yes.
A lot of times in the beginning, it's just being caring and compassionate.
Do you need to have a high school degree? Do you need to have a, you know, two-year associate's degree?
No, in the initial...
Do you need to take a course that goes for 6 weeks?
Actually, I recommend the courses. The Alzheimer's Association provides 4- and 12-hour training classes that are excellent, that help people better understand how to work with somebody suffering from Alzheimer's. The actual requirements are just, as I said, being caring and compassionate, because in the initial stages, people don't need medical care. They just need supervision, safety, somebody that's willing to listen, to initiate activity, so that people in the early stages have a quality of life and continue to have a quality of life.
Rick, I think the question needs to be parsed into two pieces. One, there is some training and certification required for someone to work with folks with dementia in a facility or in a residential environment. That's on one side. The other side is if someone wants to volunteer at the Alzheimer's Association to spend some time with someone with Alzheimer's, a four-hour training at his or her convenience is enough, provided they have, as Gene says, the basic personality and temperament to be able to deal with someone who sometimes drifts in and out of reality.
Well, let me toss a few bits and pieces out there then. And I think you're right. Now that I read this more closely while you're talking and I don't have to run my mouth at the same time, it is asking about volunteer time with patients. So Alzheimer's Association does have, did you say 4 hour?
That's a 4 hour training, and there are all kinds of volunteer opportunities that we desperately seek to fill.
Now, if someone is to take this on, if I were to be a volunteer at Alzheimer's, and Gene, you mentioned sort of having the personality for this, do I need to be mentally prepared to help people get dressed, to help people go to the bathroom, to be strong enough to lift people, to, you know, some of the other things that I think, you know, I can't think of a better word than gross, but some of the gross aspects that may go along with having to be the primary caregiver for someone, even if it's for 2 hours so that Ward can go shopping for the groceries of the week. Well, you know, if that person needs to go to the bathroom, you can't just send them in there. And maybe some you can, and you stand there and watch. But, you know, what do I need to be prepared to handle as a volunteer?
We would never, ever have a volunteer have to deal with those things. There are stages of Alzheimer's disease from the very beginning to the very end. And we would only utilize volunteers in the early stages where someone is fully capable of engaging in conversation, toileting him or herself, dressing him or herself. So it would never be a situation where the person is in the last or even the late middle stages that we would ask a volunteer, an untrained volunteer, to help.
And I go back to that caring and compassionate, but you have to have a very high level of patience, because somebody you may be working with may ask you the same thing. Where are you from, Rick? Where are you from, Rick? And you have to be prepared to answer that or redirect the person and say, oh, let's go look at the flowers. And that's part of the training process as to how to understand what people are struggling with and kind of redirect them into a different direction.
11:48 here on the Wake Up Call as we wind down our hour. And it's another one of those topics where we could keep going and going. Ward Campbell, primary caregiver to his spouse who has Alzheimer's. Larry Ziffin, president of the local Alzheimer's Association. Gene McCusker, owner of Home Instead Senior Care. If you're catching us late, www.cvillepodcast.com. Go on there. Show's usually posted within a couple hours of when we finish up here at noon, www.cvillepodcast.com, and look for the Wake Up Call. I guess one of the things that I want to get into, now you have something coming up called the Memory Walk, right? I've heard about it, I've seen something about it, and I'm assuming that it's some sort of fundraiser because the federal government has slashed all your fundraising stuff. So we're going to reason, you know, is this a national thing on the same day? Is this a... you know, something that's just here locally in Charlottesville?
No, it's a national fundraising activity. You're correct. Earlier on, you asked where we got our money from, and I said from individual contributions. Those are $5 and $10 contributions that come over the transom in memory of a friend or a neighbor or an associate's spouse who passed away. A huge portion of our budget comes from this annual Memory Walk event, which takes place in all of the 79 chapter areas around the country sometime during the fall. The Charlottesville Walk takes place October 21st, and here's where the drum rolls, and I turn it over to Gene McCusker, who is the co-chair of the Charlottesville Memory Walk Committee. Thank you.
Well, we're very excited about the Memory Walk this year. We've made a lot of changes, and as Larry said, this is our largest single fundraiser. We have a very lofty goal of surpassing $100,000 this year so these funds can stay locally and help folks locally. The Memory Walk is going to be taking place on October 21st, which is a Saturday morning. People will park at the mall. They will actually be shuttled down to Pepsi Place and then go on a walk that will take them through Charlottesville Senior Corridor, and that is back in the Hillsdale area. We are going to go through the Branchlands, go to Java. But what we've done is created a day that families can come out and celebrate their grandparents, their great aunts, uncles, whoever's fighting this disease, and enjoy the day, but also raise money. We're going to have moon bounces, face painters, massage. We're going to have putting greens. Ooh. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So that's 2 weeks from now?
Yes, it is. 2 weeks. If people have questions, they're welcome to call the Alzheimer's Association at 973-6122. If they'd like to start a team, we'd love that. If they'd like to donate to my team, not their two teams.
Nice. Competition. That was crude. Where the money
that
comes
was crude.
From.
Yes, we have a healthy competition going on amongst the teams.
So, you know, there's a team of people, and you try and raise as much money as you can, and you donate per miles walked? Or?
Nope, it's just a flat donation. If somebody wants to go out and Google Charlottesville Memory Walk, it'll take them right to the site. They can pull out a credit or debit card and donate $5 or $500.
The walk itself is sort of immaterial. It's a mile and change, and one can just come and walk and stop off at the tents and play an activity or just hang out, listen to the music. There'll be a number of bands, and it all ends at Our Lady of Peace with an antique classic car show and barbecue. All on the house donated by the various sponsoring organizations.
Right, you got me. You got putting greens, which needs practice.
Barbecue.
You got a massage.
Barbecue.
And you got barbecue at the end. All right. So we're talking about 2 weeks from now. And what time?
October 21st. You need to be at the mall between 8:30 and 9:30.
Where do you need to be for the barbecue?
Our Lady of Peace, which is out on Hillsdale Drive.
It'll cost you, Rick. It'll cost you, though.
That's all right. I'm not worried about
Rick,
that.
Rick, can I say a couple of things?
Real quick.
All right. People need to know that they don't have to suffer alone with this, and it's really important to get an early diagnosis. There are medications currently on the market that have the ability to slow down the progression of the disease. And if one can salvage a meaningful relationship with someone who has the disease for a year or two or even three, it's certainly worth it. So my plea is, please, please, if you have any concerns, call. We can direct you to doctors, to the Memory Disorders Clinic at UVA. We can help walk you through the process of what's going to happen. And again, it's all free. We encourage people to call 1-800-272-3900. That phone is answered 24/7, 365 days a year.
Does it spell something? 1-800?
No, it doesn't. So we try to work it out, but it doesn't spell anything. But a trained clinician will answer that call. And you won't have to prompt if this is about this, press 2. If this is about this, press 5. You'll be immediately plugged through, put through to someone who can help. Please, please, don't suffer alone.
We still got a few minutes left. So I was just trying to speed you up because I had a couple questions I wanted to toss at you. But let me thank 45fix.com. For their support today. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And not that you would go anywhere when we finished our Alzheimer's show, but special surprise guest hosting Les Temps-Perdue. Stay tuned. I don't know where George is, probably. Maybe he's walking the mall. All right, 11:54 in the wake-up call. Last few minutes of Alzheimer's discussion with Gene McCusker, Larry Zippin, and Ward Campbell. You threw out a few phone numbers. Ward, did you find anything that was helpful to you in terms of... You mentioned a whole bunch of things in terms of organizations that were helpful, the local discussion group, et cetera. But did you read any books? Are there any books out there that just say, here, you know, try this. We suffer with you. I suffered with you, or from whatever method they approach.
Yes, there are books out there, and that's another thing that the Alzheimer's Association helps with. They have a library at the association headquarters, which is right in the Java building. It's very convenient. I've read all of their books and pamphlets. I've gone to the Charlottesville Public Library. And checked all their books. I've found some that were really very interesting. one book I've read three times because I liked it so well. It really explained what was going on, and I related to it very well, and I liked it. So there are a lot of resources in the library and things that you can read and information available at the Alzheimer's Association. We'll certainly go a long way towards helping you to understand that this is a disease. It's not anybody's fault. You don't need to be embarrassed by it. I still am embarrassed occasionally by the disease. When I have to put up with Peggy's unusual behavior in public, it's tough. I don't like it at all, but I realize that's what's going to happen. I've had to accept the challenge. When she does strange things, I'm going to have to deal with it. People usually, when they know she has Alzheimer's, they won't be helpful. But usually people don't know that in public, and they think she's just acting strangely and that I ought to do something about it. So those are, you know, some of the problems that I have with it, but you have to deal with it, have to live with it, and there's plenty of help for you here in Charlottesville.
I asked about the books because, you know, obviously I'm being stereotypical, but it seems like for something like Alzheimer's, that in the beginning, and I think, Larry, you threw this word out there earlier, but people were just, you know, the stereotypes that go with that and your fear of what others are going to think of you. And so you're more likely to, in the beginning, whether you're trying to not believe that this is what's happening or just want to do this in a private manner, that you're more likely to read a book or make that anonymous phone call to Alzheimer's than you are to actually walk down to Java or walk down to Alzheimer's Association and talk about it. And that may be completely untrue. But it just seemed like if there were some books out there, do you remember the name of the one that you said you read three times?
Yeah, The House on Bear Mountain Road. It's a very, it's a fun book. It's a life story or a real story of a lady, a single mother in New England, who's raising a young child at the same time she's taking care of her father, who has Alzheimer's. And as her father goes downhill, her child learns more and more. So she's watching her father die as she watches her child grow. And it's a very interesting story with a lot of pathos to it, but very nice. And what you said about dealing with it is certainly true. In my case, when I first called the Alzheimer's Association for help and for a reference to a doctor, it turned out I happened to know the volunteer who took my call. I later went by and told her, I hope you don't tell anybody about this call because I don't want anybody to know. I've gotten past that now, of course, but I think that's kind of typical. People don't want others to know that a relative has Alzheimer's.
And Larry, I'm assuming that that is the case without being requested.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that there, unfortunately, there's a stigma still associated with Alzheimer's disease. There ought not to be a stigma associated with any disease, mental disease in particular. Alzheimer's is not a mental disease. It's a degenerative brain disorder where, at the end of the day, your brain has shrunk to half the size that it was originally.
And the sad part is that as people are trying to hide it, when they are finally ready to make it public, so often their friends go away. And that adds to the isolation even more, that people are uncomfortable with people with Alzheimer's, just like they are uncomfortable with somebody dying of cancer. A lot of people will pull back, and people really need to get more comfortable and be there to support their friends and family.
You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Ward, a quick question for you. People don't know, or people sort of disappear. What happened to you in that sense, and what would you like to sort of to toss out for listeners as a training device for their friends who are going through the same issues?
It certainly happened to me. A lot of our friends who we used to, we had a card-playing group that kind of fell apart. People used to come and visit us that no longer do. I have friends at church and other places who walked away. They didn't want to talk anymore. They didn't want to be with Peggy and I. But conversely, the opposite happened. Our church group organized a weekly group to come and stay with Peggy. This was before I went to Java. And they would very faithfully come, probably 20 ladies organized it, and it worked out very well. So even though you lose some friends, you certainly gain more than enough other friends, and you treasure these friends, and they are a big help.
All right. I want to thank the three of you for coming in today. I found that to be a very enlightening and somewhat emotional hour. Gene, thank you. I appreciate the business that you run. I know that it helps a lot of people. Ward, I don't know what else to say except good luck, and I hope things go as smoothly as possible for you.
Thank you.
Larry, I appreciate you running such a fine nonprofit and helping as many people as you do.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, boys and girls, next week we'll be talking about an air pollution case that's going to the Supreme Court, and our guest will be someone from the Southern Environmental Law Center. Thanks so much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.